Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 19th for January the 7th, 2013. My name is Stuart Clark.
And I'm James Wilkinson.
Welcome back, James. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
And I'm pleased I actually managed to get that intro done and use the right date. So one thing I hate about the new year, having to, especially when I used to write checks a lot, having to remember to put, you know, the correct year.
I still get it wrong.
I know, me too, but I'm pretty impressed with myself. So anyway, we've got a brand new year, and of course a brand new year means the Consumer Electronics Show. So we're going to be doing some coverage on that. And you were saying earlier, James, how many stories did you read today, or at least read the summaries of?
425.
A lot of new stuff going
before
on.
Before I read the other past 20 that have came in since 20 minutes ago.
Lots of stuff being released down in Las Vegas. You know, it's funny, every year people say, oh, CES is passe, but I tell you, every year there's always all sorts of cool things. So we're going to be talking about that as well. First, we're going to open up with our bit of congratulations to our co-host, Jameson Roberts. He got himself hitched on the weekend. Married his sweetheart, Nadia. I hear it was a really good time. And we banned him from coming in today. So I don't think he needed much encouragement. Exactly. Anyway, okay, let's get things started here. Our first item is actually from the Globe and Mail, and this was a couple of weeks ago. Amazon and Netflix, running on Amazon Cloud Service, had a Christmas Eve glitch when everyone, you know, gathered around the computer or the TV to fire up Netflix so they didn't have to talk to their family members. Netflix didn't work for them, James, did it?
No.
No, and that meant
but I canceled Netflix.
Well, you know what? And that meant people had to talk to each other.
Well, I don't think I talked to many people around.
Not yourself, but, you know, you're different than most. But anyway, you know, this is considered a high-profile failure, but it also kind of, you know, reminds people that, you know, stuff in the cloud, you know, whether it's in the cloud or within a data center, failure can still happen. But it also shows how reliable or how much we rely on some of these new you know, technologies and that. And the problem is this is also a little bit of a black eye for Amazon because they're really trying to push, you know, their AWS service, you know, and all that data center storage sort of thing, because they don't just want to get into selling products. You know, they want to sell data storage, you know, in remote locations. And there's a lot of web companies that most of you would be familiar with, things like Instagram, obviously Netflix, and they all use Amazon services and data centers. Any other comments on this, James?
It's been happening a lot lately. Mm-hmm. So really, I just think Amazon's probably doing something to cause this to happen, because Amazon's uptime is like notoriously amazing.
Do you think it could be a problem with maybe, you know, they're growing too big and they're having scaling issues?
Not really. I think they're probably trying to test something and, not thinking it all the way through first, growing too fast, but I think it's more of a, they're probably running into problems or unforeseen problems with hardware while they're doing upgrades and stuff.
Right.
And it's been happening a lot lately, and it's the perfect time to start upgrading stuff for Amazon because it's getting older. So I think there's just something they're not saying.
Right.
And that it's not anything to worry about. But regardless, if it's in the cloud, it's going to go down at some point, and you're not going to have access to it at some point.
Well, I think
that's why hardwired stuff, and that's why there's millions and millions of kilometers of cable throughout the countries connecting everything. It's because everything still needs to get somewhere accessed at some point.
I think it also shows that, you know, just like if you've got a business with its own data center, depending on how important it is to be that 99.59% uptime, you know, you may have to look at hosting on a different server or something, or a different service. It shows no matter what, you know, you still need to have, if you need that to be up 100% of the time, you're going to have to definitely take some steps to it. I agree with what you're saying. You know, there's obviously some stuff they're doing. I think, you know, they might also be suffering through some growing pains. Again, more and more services and stuff like that are going through there. And some of the numbers are just huge when you think about a lot of the familiar web web properties that actually use Amazon AWS instead of having their own data center. So we'll have to keep an eye on that in future and see what happens. Okay, turning to the BlackBerry 10, latest rumor. There was some more leaked info. It showed a video chat and screen sharing in BBM, as well as a new task manager. And there were some pictures here and that. And again, it looks fairly similar to what we've seen already from some of the other stuff. Again, it looks interesting to see what RIM's going to bring to the table at the end of January. I love the quote they had when Engadget went to them with this. We understand there's a lot of excitement for BlackBerry 10. We will launch the platform on January 30th, and until then, we won't comment on speculation. I think that's more or less saying, yeah, that's what it looks like.
Because I'm like, well, it's also interesting to add that these slides that they brought up say BlackBerry confidential shared under NDA, and it's posted on the internet.
Well, exactly. It's like anything else. You're not going to get away. It's going to get leaks and that. There's some other interesting things here. They've been talking about, the gold software development kit. They may include some Evernote integration, which is something I use, and it's quite popular. So, again, I'm really looking forward to seeing what Research in Motion does, and I wish them all the best. And, I'm really hoping, they find themselves a good product for those customers that have basically stayed with BlackBerry. Moving on, Facebook. Facebook taps Canada to test talk an app. This is a new enhanced mobile app that will allow users to make free calls from their smartphones. This is a little bit like Google Voice, but it's not quite the same. James, what do you think of this?
It's not going to go anywhere. If Canada has anything, we can at least call each other. It's our data that it costs us way, way too much. And this uses data. So it's no one's going to use it. It's cheaper to have a phone plan than any sort of voice over IP plan. I mean, I have long distance available on my Skype, and I never use it. I always end up using my minutes instead.
Really? Okay, interesting. And that's because, like, you're usually, when you're wanting to do stuff like that, you're away from, like, Wi-Fi and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
and I need to rely on an actual phone line for it to be able to do something.
Right.
Like, it's still going to have everything like text tones and everything, but it's probably not going to be as easy to use as just picking up the actual phone application part of your smartphone.
Do you think this is more of a, basically Facebook trying to keep people inside their own walled garden, shall we say?
Of course. It's all that it is. It's that's the Zuckerberg idea of he wants to be the top of, he wants to be the king of the hill.
Right. But we can say the same thing with most companies. You've got Skype being purchased not long ago and other things. Everyone's trying to keep the eyeballs in their own, in their own garden, shall we say.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's free. What do you expect?
Well, exactly. The one thing I did find interesting with this article is they talked about some stats for Canadian usage of Facebook. And it's pretty amazing when you think about it. We have and the article has, in a country of 35 million, 12 million users log into the site every day. And a data tracking firm, ComScore, has reported that 4 out of every 5 internet users in Canada have Facebook accounts. We also have more friends than users in the other countries. We average 230 friends each versus a global average of 130. I don't think I have 230 friends on Facebook. How about you, James?
There's like 450 something.
See, you're a popular guy. You're obviously skewing it that way. That's pretty amazing, though.
I have a list, though. Most of those people can't see anything.
That's probably
wise. They're just there for address book purposes.
Oh, really? So you use it as like an address book?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Like I say, I don't use people say I don't use Facebook a lot. The one thing I always get, and I wish there was a way you could turn it off or something, is that people send me like Facebook email, like directly within the app. And I confess, I'm terrible at answering that. I might check that only like once a month. And it's like, people from a month ago going, I'm like, got to take care of that. I haven't answered that person. I'm still one of these people that still believe in old school email. But apparently I'm in the minority.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're very quiet tonight. There you go. You're still recovering from New Year's. That's what it is.
I've slept a lot in the New Year.
You slept a lot in the New Year. Okay.
Now, I just don't really like Facebook that much.
Well, there we go.
Trying to get rid of it, but it's very difficult.
It is very, yeah. You know, Google Plus has tried and
that
stuff like
walled
that.
Garden, that wall is really high.
It is.
Really
it
high
is.
To climb.
It is very high. That's a good way to put it. Okay, our buddy Jameson, when he wasn't getting himself married, and I told him he wasn't supposed to show his face digitally or otherwise, he added this article. This is an interesting one. Google and Microsoft declare war. This is an issue. This was from Gizmodo. And apparently Google Maps, you can't get to it if you're using Internet Explorer Mobile. It was interesting. Apparently before, you could use maps.google.com work fine on Windows Phone until Google started blocking it. But apparently there seems to be some issues here. Now, there's been a bit of back and forth. A Google spokesman said, and I quote, "The mobile web version of Google Maps is optimized for WebKit browsers such as Chrome and Safari. However, since Internet Explorer is not a WebKit browser, Windows Phone devices are not able to access Google Maps for the mobile web." And then update two, and a Microsoft spokesman has responded to Google saying, IE and Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8 use the same rendering engine. So if you can get to it on the desktop, why can't you get to it on the smaller phone or whatnot? So it sounds like Google's actively blocking this. Is this kind of the yet another salvo? And do you think, you know, Google's going to play a little bit more hardball saying, well, you have to download Chrome mobile for Windows 8 if such a beast exists?
I don't think Google is actively blocking this at all. Microsoft has been given the chance time and time again to get their act together and follow WebKit. Everyone is following WebKit except Microsoft.
Right.
So it's Microsoft's own fault. Internet Explorer is a horrible browser everywhere and anywhere.
Exactly. I have to agree. But again, do you think we're going to be seeing more of this, or... You know.
Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, the reason you can't access it on your mobile is that it needs GPS information from the web browser, and you can only get that through WebKit. Mm-hmm. The way to get that through Microsoft's way requires a lot of a ton of extra coding that there's no reason to put that extra coding in to support Internet Explorer. The same reason people drop support for IE6 and IE7 when they're designing a website, because it's just way too much extra work to be able to support it.
Now, what's interesting is there's been some comments to the Engadget blog is that apparently this was working only a few hours ago and people were using it using IE. Furthermore, if you spoof the user agent identifier on Windows Phone, Google Maps works normally. So again, maybe there's, you know, a little bit, you know, maybe they're purposely blocking it. Again, it's interesting to see what happens. It'll be interesting to see what happens ahead, because, you know, it's funny, Google, you know, when they first started up, they had the mantra, don't be evil, but they're now a pretty big company and, you know, they've done some Microsoft type stuff before. So it'll be interesting to see what happens is, or if this gets magically fixed. Now that could be my tinfoil hat, but I'm seeing a few comments here.
I think they'll just eventually come out with an app. They said they won't, but they probably will.
Yeah.
There's no way they're not going to go have their own app. I mean, it's a way to expand their business.
Right. Oh,
at the moment, to support anything Windows is going to bring
at the
you
moment,
to
I know,
business.
I only know about one person that has a Windows phone, so I have to reach out to them and see if they're having this issue. Because they got Windows 8 now on their phone not that long ago, so I'll have to reach out and find out. That'll be interesting to see. But again, it could be the latest salvo, so we'll have to see what happens. Okay, moving on. I found this story on Gizmodo, and I found it kind of interesting. The title is An iPhone Lover's Confession. I switched to the Nexus 4 completely. And this is from a guy. He is a geek. He's a tech guy. He works with phones all the time. So he's definitely inside the bubble. And he says he's got a ton of, you know, he says if you come by his house, you'll find 4 of the latest Apple TVs, 2 iMacs, a MacBook Air, a MacBook Pro, 5 Airport Express stations, time capsule, lots of iPhones, iPads, you know, so it's in, you know, he's what we definitely call a fanboy, major user of Apple products. But then he decided to try the Nexus 4. Now, I've been hearing very good things about the Nexus 4, actually. I'm nowhere near to be considering an upgrade or anything, but I like what he does. He does kind of a point by point, and this is what he likes about it. So it's very, I'll call it a very calm, very intelligent, you know, the reason he likes it. And he basically says that. He says, this is what works for me. And I have to admit, it's kind of nice to kind of see an article like this, where just, you know, this is how it works for this sort of person. You know, and he does have some criticisms too, but I found it a very good article, and it's one I'm going to bookmark, because, you know, down the road, if I want to get a phone eventually, you know, it's something I always look at, you know, with a fairly neutral thing, what works for me. The one thing I do chuckle at in the article, he features a couple of the wallpapers you can get, and the tiled looks like Windows 8.
It does.
But again, it was a very, very well-written article. Did you have any comments on this, or?
The main thing is, you said it right at the beginning, is that he is a geek. And Android is an amazing platform, and they are amazing phones if you're a geek.
Yep.
Because they take forever to get set up and running.
Yep.
I mean, they say it's a cliche about Apple to say it just works, but it's true. It just works. You open it, there's, I think, 5 or 6 pages of setup before you're even allowed to use the phone, and you go. You turn on an Android phone, it's just there. It's just like a computer. You turn it on, you've got to take out all the crap that it comes with. You've got to put in all the stuff that you want it to make it work. Even at the bottom of this article, he has everything that he's added into it to make it the perfect phone for him.
Yep, he's
Which
mentioned
is great
that.
Because it allows you to have all that customization.
Yep.
But Apple's market is more along the lines of the people who want to get up and go. The app ecosystem is the other thing, is that it's so much easier. There's something to be said about the closed network of the Apple Store, because everything has to be approved. It makes sure your phone works. Your Android can still download a perfectly, seemingly perfect app and have millions of issues with it and never get any support for it.
Well, and that's true. And the other thing to keep in mind is, as you're saying with the App Store, you can have quite an investment. It's something I have to think about if I want to get a 7-inch tablet down the road. You know, do I want to give up all the apps I've already purchased for my iPad, you know, and start fresh? And, you know, and that's certainly a factor, too, one has to think about, you know, whether you want to leave that ecosystem and the investment you've made.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But no, it's like I said, very well worth reading. It was quite good. I found it. I would like to see more articles like this. And the points you say are all right on, James, exactly, with, you know, the Mac experience. But this I was very impressed with this article. And, you know, he also talks about where he went back trying a Nexus 3 and he didn't like that. So he was very impressed with the latest version of Android, which is Jelly Bean. And he also says here, you know, maybe Apple will win me back with iOS 7. You know, he says, will I sell my iPhone 5? No, no, no. I never sold one. I'll keep it. Maybe it'll manage to win me back with iOS 7. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Again, competition is inherently healthy. And this is what I love. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to talk about one of our new sponsors, and that's ILO Technologies. They have a app for Windows called System Mechanic, and they were kind enough to send me up a copy and a license. And System Mechanic basically is a really good thing. You know, Mac users don't have to worry about this as much, but Windows people, no matter what, they reach a point where you get a lot of crud, a lot of uninstalled bits and pieces in the registry, stuff like that. And, you know, for people like techies like me and that, we can go behind the scenes and fix a lot, but there's something to be said for actually being able to do it quickly and easily and, you know, even quite a bit on your own. And, this is the System Mechanic product. I actually, I tried it. I tried it on a couple of machines. I even tried my wife's machine because hers really hasn't had a good tune-up or anything in a while. I always find it hilarious. I spend all the time talking about backing up and fine-tuning and all that. I do all that for my customers and friends. But what's the ones we always ignore? Our own at home, right? So I fired this up, went through, and what this does is this goes through. It checks registries. It does the defrag stuff, all sorts of stuff like that. It'll also wipe, you know, older cache files, stuff like that. It'll repair problems. What happens is they also feature intelligent live updates. So right now they'll diagnose and fix over 30,000 PC problems using the intelligent live update. So I have to admit, I ran this thing. I'm always skeptical with these sort of products, but I ran it, installed very, very well. There was a base installer, which downloaded the latest version of the program. And you basically go in and you tell it to analyze your system. Then it comes up with some recommendations. And you can choose to have it do it all automatically. Or what I like is you can go step by step and it will guide you through and it will tell you things. Like, for example, there's quite often in the Windows world, you get a lot of awful lot of services and programs that start up that you maybe don't need after a while. Well, it'll go through and it'll actually list those all and it'll say, you know, okay, this is what this is for. This is what people use it for. And it will also show how many people have chosen to leave it running or not leave it running. So that was kind of cool too. And you always have the option again to turn it back on. It, you know, it doesn't just leave you hanging. So I definitely would say give this a try. This is something you can use. You can also get a free trial version at iolo.com, iolo.com. And the product's called System Mechanic. And we thank them for their support of the Canadian Tech Podcast. Okay, moving on. How was that for a plug, James?
Perfect.
Perfect. There you go. Okay, so where are we here? We are
CES.
What is CES, James? Do tell.
So for those who haven't heard of this before, you're under a rock. And then two, CES stands for the Consumer Electronics Show.
And where do they
have it? It's held every January in Las Vegas. And basically what it is that every year this is where all of the big guys, except for basically Apple and Microsoft, come together.
Microsoft isn't there.
Yeah, this year they're not there. Last year. Come together and they announce all of their latest and greatest stuff that's going to be coming out for the consumer market. So basically, usually whatever is announced in January goes on for sale in March.
Now, you were actually down there a couple of years ago, weren't you?
Yeah, I went in, I think, 2010.
That's right.
3 years ago now.
Right.
It's massive. Like, you have to know what it is you want to see beforehand, map it out and direct your route and see the best way to do something, because this conference is massive. It is the largest in the world.
Well, they talk about it filling like 30 football fields worth of stuff. And it varies from like all the big boys all the way down to like, you know, small.
Even the small guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Even small guys, single guys in a booth sort of thing. Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of small booths and stuff. Like the one day I walked the same floor 4 times and never saw the same thing twice.
Wow. You definitely have to kind of pace yourself, I guess.
Yeah, because I was trying to figure out where I was, because I swear I'd gone to the other buildings, and it turns out I didn't.
Oh, dear.
I was in the same building.
Now, do they still hand out a lot of swag, or is that pretty well gone now because you can get a lot of it off the websites? When you were there?
Everyone has swag because everyone loves swag, but it's always like pens, stickers.
Right. I remember years ago, you go to Comdex shows and you get boxes of paperwork. This is before the net. You get boxes and boxes of flyers and catalogs. And I also remember one year IBM had and I remember this at Canadian Comdex show too. IBM was handing out these little boxes. There were like a little cardboard box that had a little carry handle and it had a slot in the side. So what you would do is you would, you know, you get your promotional literature and all that, put that in the side, and then you take it to the FedEx booth there and mail it back to your office. You know, like again, yeah. Back then, because that's, you know, that's how you got the stuff. We're talking 15 years ago, so it was before the web.
Yeah, what they did this time was any of the big guys, the small guys tended to have pamphlets and stuff, but the big guys like Samsung, Intel, Microsoft, et cetera, actually Microsoft is probably there. They just didn't have a press conference.
Apparently they don't even have a booth for the first time. Yeah. That was kind of the news.
Yeah. But all of the vendors have this little portable computer.
Okay.
And you come in and you have a card that has your contact information on it, and anyone that you want more information on, you just give them the card and they swipe it for you, and then it gets emailed to you later.
Yeah. They actually did that for the technology show here in London at the fair, actually. A month and a half ago. So, okay.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool technology. So,
cool. All right. So let's get on to some of the good stuff.
Yeah. So there was a lot of announcements today, because today, tomorrow, and maybe Wednesday are the press days.
Okay.
So this is, everyone gets the first look at CES that has a press pass. So this is when everyone has their conferences that say, this is what's going to be on display on our booth for those who are getting into the exhibit. Right. The exhibit is only for people who are in the consumer industry, and it's targeted for people who are ready to buy basically wholesale.
Right.
So this year, so far, there's been a lot of new chipsets.
Okay.
So there's been stuff from NVIDIA and Intel, both based off of mobile chipsets. So stuff to compete with Apple's A5.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be really interesting. There's also been a lot of new mobile phones, all Android-based, and a couple of Windows phones. Because, I mean, there's not going to be a new iPhone. So,
right, no.
A lot of new cameras, both point-and-shoot and DSLR. They have a lot more focus on sort of video blogging now. So a lot of them have either reversible mirrors to see what it is you're doing, are a lot easier to hold in front of you, wider lenses to see more of you while it's holding in front of you, that kind of thing. And then what CES is really, really sort of known for is the home theater space.
Right.
And that's sort of the stories that we have for you today are finally 4K TVs are coming to your living room.
Okay, a 4K TV. Now, I'm about to switch from my old CRT 27-inch tube to just a regular flat screen. And you're telling me it's obsolete already?
That thing has been obsolete for years.
God damn it. Okay, tell us all about 4K TV, James.
So 4K is the resolution that you see when you're going to see a movie.
Okay.
So if you go out to the movie theaters, that big old screen, the amount of pixels that is being projected onto that is called 4K resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And the IMAX experience, not an actual real IMAX, uses the 8K resolution. So these TVs are being marketed as Ultra HD. I don't know. I guess they didn't figure anybody would understand what 4K or 8K would mean.
All right.
So they decided, oh, we'll name this Ultra HD.
So is this going to be like, is this going to make, a Blu-ray movie better?
Yes. Look better? So Basically what you're going to see is these TVs really come into play when you get past the 55-inch range.
Right.
Because a 55-inch 1080p TV is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You get about a 1-to-1 ratio for your pixels.
Wow.
Which means so that nothing is being stretched any other way or anything like that. When you get higher than that, it's like you're stretching your picture more and more and more and more.
Right.
So once you get somewhere up to what you say 85 inches, which are the real home theater buffs, 1080p doesn't look as great unless you're sitting really far away.
Right. That makes sense.
Which you don't sit really far away when you're in your home.
I don't
so
know.
If you want a bigger TV that you want to look at closer, you need a higher resolution.
Right.
That's where these 4K and 8K come in.
Right.
8K isn't going to be coming in for a little bit while. For a little while, 4K will come first.
Yeah, I'm just looking here at some of the links you sent. They talk about a Sharp 60-inch TV. And, of course, these are brand new products. So because of that, they have a really high price tag. So So this 60-inch Ultra HD out of Sharp Japan, they want $31,000 for this guy.
Yeah, well, because it's also that one's LCD. The other ones are LED.
Right.
These ones are all LCD. The other news story was that a bunch of people are abandoning and going LED only.
LED instead of the LCD, and that seems to be the way most of the industry is going now.
Yeah, and everyone already abandoned plasma, but plasma is still actually the winner in most home theaters.
Right, right. And is that because of price?
Price, and they've fixed any issues that people always used to have the worries about, like burn-in and the toxins and et cetera.
I guess the other thing, too, is that what sort of resolution is this going to do if I want to make this a giant monitor for my Mac?
If you make it a giant monitor, it's not designed for that.
Okay.
Because monitors are meant for you to be a lot closer to.
Right.
That's why TVs get away with a lot lower resolution, because you'll find that I have a 32-inch flat screen TV that's 1080 or 720p,
mm-hmm.
Which is basically 1024 by 720 tall. Right. There's a whole slew of monitors that are a lot bigger than that, but you don't use them as a TV.
Right, right. Okay, good. Like I said, good points. And I think that's one area that still a lot of people get confused with, you know, especially when they're looking at getting a home theater and that sort of thing. Because we're really talking about, you know, everything has a computer now in it. So it does make it confusing.
Yeah, when it comes to home theater, the best experience you're ever going to get is if you're running a media center computer hooked up to a projector and an amazing sound system with a great sound card.
Exactly.
If you don't have the amount of money to go that far, then you go into TVs because TVs are generally a lot cheaper than any monitor computer combination.
Right. Exactly. So,
and then when it comes to your TVs, it's basically what can you fit in the room is basically what a lot of people go by.
which is kind of a shame because there is sometimes where you can have a TV that's too big for a small room.
You can, because there's actually an algorithm related to how big of a TV for how far away you are.
Right.
And how much ambient light is in the room. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, good to know.
But that's what's really interesting about CES is you get to see a lot of new home theater equipment. And then the other stuff, and that's sort of the real consumer side of it. All the other stuff in CES tends to be more related to this goes into a consumer product, like a lot of the chipsets.
Right. Well, you know what? That's an excellent segue because the next link we have is we talk about that. Intel partners with Comcast. Future chipsets will stream live TV without a set-top box.
Yeah, this is really cool.
Yeah.
However, unfortunately, they're partnered with Comcast, which means it's not going to be available in Canada for like ever.
A while.
But basically, this eliminates the need for a set-top box. And so this comes more and more towards the idea that your computer is your media center instead of a cable box or a Blu-ray player or any of that jazz. So,
now, could they actually put this in they could also put this in inside the TV?
Yes, this could also go into a TV. And that's where a lot of it's going into is one thing I didn't touch on with the TV is smart TVs.
Right.
So people are now, there's no such thing as a dumb TV anymore.
Right.
They're all smart TVs. They can all connect to the internet, pull down TV guide listing information, pull down apps like YouTube, Vimeo, and stuff like that. So you don't even have to hook your computer up to them anymore.
Right. Now, I do know one thing. Apparently, not a lot of people already have some of the smart TVs, but not a lot of them are using them to their full potential yet.
Yeah, and I think that comes from not really understanding what its purpose is,
right?
As well as a huge failure in the user experience of having to use them. The remote control is probably the worst piece of equipment to have to interact with ever. And Intel actually, Intel is really on the ball lately, by the way, with new innovative products. This is the set-top's only one of them. Another product they had was, and I'll find the link to it later, was a remote control called the Smart Remote. And it completely eliminates the keypad, and you literally finger 4 and 5 to go to channel 45.
Interesting. So. But what happens if you hit the 5 slightly before you hit the 4?
Oh, who knows?
So, yeah, okay, so that's an interesting one. What's the next one you have here? Intel will offer Kinect-like motion sensor to computers.
Oh, look, another Intel story.
Another Intel story.
They're really dominating lately.
They are.
They need to go beyond their chipsets to be able to succeed because their chipsets are amazing, but they're you're eventually going to be able to go so small and so far. So.
Well, and they've also gotten other manufacturers now competing with them for chipsets. So
they're also branching into other areas of business. Yes. And this new one is there was actually this. I actually think they may have bought this company.
They're partnering with Nuance. It says here on the Verge article.
Yeah, and so this is a little device like the Xbox Kinect sensor. Mm-hmm. So this will basically bring in, it will sense, the Kinect works by sensing infrared and motion and black and white picture.
Right.
To create 3D models. So they're trying to do the same kind of thing. And so this would allow you to have a lot more different kind of gesture abilities as well as manipulating things in sort of a 3D space.
That'll be kind of cool because I know, like, for example, our friends here at the Unlab, they use the Kinect as a 3D scanner when they want to do put objects in to Google SketchUp that they'll eventually print on the MakerBot. So
they're basically eliminating the hassle of hacking the Kinect sensor to work with the computer and just giving you your own sensor.
Yep. So again, I think that's a you know, that's an awesome, awesome thing as well. If you want some really good, good coverage, The Verge has some excellent coverage from CES. I'm just looking at their main page now, and they talk about Samsung unveils amazing 85-inch 4K TV.
Yeah, and so that article's in there too.
Yeah,
it looks a little weird, but it's cool.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? A little bit. Again, I don't want to know how much it's going to be.
That one, I think, was 80,000 plus.
I think I'm going to have to save my pennies for a while, James, I tell you.
The Verge has been really cool lately too. I mean, they're really stepping up in sort of the technology news space. I mean,
they are.
They're only a year old now, so yep.
I've been very impressed. I use them as my go-to now during Apple keynotes and that. They tend to be able to handle the load better than anyone else, and they're pretty quick with the updates. I know when we've done our Apple shows, I tend to
It amazes me how fast they are.
Yeah, I know. They got a really fast typer. Okay, the next link here is this one's just – I looked at the picture of this, and I was going, what the hell is this? Slurper? Fast free Wi-Fi with a big catch.
Oh, so that's how you say it.
I'm going on that. I'm going to assume. That's slurper. A big assumption.
Yeah, so this thing has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 antennas on the back of it.
Yes.
And what it does is it scans the area for people who don't have secured internet connections.
Mm-hmm.
Wi-Fi connections.
I like this in quotes, available.
Yes, so available connections. Now, this is illegal, by the way, to use someone else's open internet connection. However, it's gray because there's no real way to tell someone is using your own internet connection.
And I think something kind of cool about this is, let's say, you know, you're doing a conference or something and you've got, you know, because it's just, you know, let's say you've got something like a conference or something, you got several businesses together and they all bring their own routers in. Well, instead of having to set up, it's kind of a quick and easy way, instead of having to set up a bunch of different access points saying, okay, you can use conference A, B, C, or D. You know, it kind of, you know, I can see that sort of thing, but.
Yeah, that would be neat if it let you logged into different access.
Yeah, exactly. But
it takes every single available internet connection and lets you use every single available internet connection. So it's automatically, it's like a load balancing router.
Yeah, exactly.
Automatically split your traffic between all of those and send them back and receive it. So it's really cool technology wise because it's tiny. It like fits in your hand.
Oh yeah, exactly. It's got a 266 megahertz MIPS CPU, 64 mega RAM, Linux installed on a 1 gig compact flash card. Basically does this. So yeah, interesting.
So this was by some just regular hacker. So
yes,
it'd be very interesting to see who buys up his idea and him with it. Because they will create some amazing routers.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be interesting. Interesting here. And again, if you link through the article, they give you some more information. I could see some of our friends here at the Unlab liking this.
Yeah,
exactly. Okay, what's next? Oh, and we wanted to do a quick little plug there, just reminding people if you know, this is the perfect kind of reason to remind you from my own business as Clark Consulting, secure your Wi-Fi access points if you don't want to share. Good common thing to do. And if you do need some other technology advice or some general things on how to do more with your machine, go ahead and give me a call. Blatant plug here at S. Clark Consulting. James will give me a good rating too.
Who you get a call? Stuart!
There you go. SClarkConsulting.ca, 519-933-8493. And the phone is in airplane mode right now, so don't bother calling right now if you're watching live.
There, things are blowing up. What do I do?
Exactly. Yeah, I'm done. And I see we got some people in the chat room. Welcome. Okay, what's the next story, James?
So another really cool, fun part from CES, aside from all the really, really expensive stuff, and I mean really expensive, like $1,000 and
yeah, up. This is still expensive, but.
Yeah, this is still expensive, but it. There's a lot of cool things that happen out of CES, sort of related to toys.
Yes.
So when I went into CES 3 years ago, the big cool toy was that drone helicopter you controlled with your iPhone.
The Parrot, yes. Awesome.
Which is now huge.
Yeah.
So this year, LEGO has debuted an iOS-compatible LEGO Mindstorm. So Mindstorm is like Kinex, but a little bit cooler. It allows you to put robot programming into them. And so this is basically they've developed their Mindstorm robot controlling module system to now work with iOS. So it it's going to be really cool and fun to hack with.
Yeah, they're going to have Lego's partnered with Autodesk to incorporate a set of 3D building instructions, which will be released in the form of an iPad app. The actual intelligent brick, it's pretty powerful. This is going to feature an ARM9 processor, 16 mega flash, 64 meg of RAM, and the ability to function without the PCs that previous Mindstorm systems have been dependent on. So yeah, this will be the first one that's going to be programmed without a computer. As you say, full compatibility with iOS and Android devices right out of the box, plus an infrared sensor. So there's going to be some pretty cool things. USB port. Now, the only thing is, yeah, it's going to be $349.
All for a low time fee of $34.99.
I wish. But yeah, no, that's going to be cool. And there's some amazing stuff people have done with Mindstorms. Definitely check YouTube and stuff like that. Maybe it's something we'll have to do a pledge drive for the Unlab for to get one of these. We've got some of the older ones here, and it's pretty cool what people can come up with. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what else comes out of that from Lego there. That's a very cool product, James. Mm-hmm. Okay, now this one I found. This one blows me away. I think this is just so cool.
So cool.
Yeah, it's cool. Again, it's still something, it's kind of a demonstration thing, but it's from Queen's University up here in Canada. This is a paper tablet computer, and it's very thin. It's like a piece of plastic, but, you know, very much in test mode first. And you really have to, it's called Paper Tab. You really have to kind of watch the video to really understand how cool it is. But yeah, if you watch the video, you'll see. It's basically, you know, they kind of reminds me of the old tablets from Star Trek that will talk to each other and stuff like that. So this thing is, it's fully interactive. It's a 10.7 plastic display, flexible touch screen. It's got a Intel Core i5 processor in there. And you know, you instead of having several apps for Windows on a single display, you can have 10 or more displays, interactive displays, one per app in use. So these are like sheets of paper. You know, yeah. We're really emulating the whole thing about that. And again, when you watch the video, you can see how it works. It's pretty cool. What really I think neat is they keep track of each of these little tablets, paper tabs. They keep track of each other's location, you know, on the desk or whatever. So that's kind of cool as well. What comments do you have about it?
Looking at them using it, it's going to really bring a new era to interaction design, because it's going to bring you back to more humanistic maneuvers.
Yeah.
So in the video, you'll see that they're sort of rolling up the tip of one of the pages to sort of switch the page in a book, mm-hmm. Instead of swiping side to side. Now swiping in itself was a very innovative thing, but it's still not the natural way you would use a book.
Right.
So by making this sort of paper tablet, it really focuses on the real way you interact with things. So
I think it'll be good too, because, you know, there's still a lot of people, particularly the older set, that are intimidated by computers. And this may get them more into it, because, you know, it's a more, as you say, it's more a natural thing.
It's important to mention that this is just sort of a prototype, all the brains behind it aren't actually in the paper. They're just connected to the paper
to a machine, exactly, thing. And they're showing
the
that
machine
there.
That does it. It's massive and behind the scenes,
right?
So.
But you know, like anything else, that too will change, right?
And it'll eventually get smaller and smaller, yeah. And smaller.
And these things, instead of having wires hooked up to them, they'll be wireless and things like that. But yeah, it's, you know, this is one of my things. This and the Mindstorm, but particularly this, I'll remember mostly from this year's CES. Now, I say that before all the announcements have happened, right? So who knows what will come out next.
Yeah, there's still another 2 days of announcements.
Exactly.
And then the floor is open, so I may or may not still fly down to Vegas.
Are you thinking about going down? Really?
I really, really want to go.
Arm Man in Vegas.
I am so frustrated with myself that I didn't get my early bird tickets this year.
Silly boy.
Because it's free if you register early enough.
Well, exactly.
And
well,
you're in the industry.
If you do,
otherwise, it's $100 plus the whole $500.
If you do go down, I expect a report.
Oh, of course.
Live, our man in Vegas.
Live from Vegas.
Exactly. Okay,
it's James on the monorail.
Our man James in Vegas. I tell you, we could take that many different directions, my friend. Okay, we also feature NVIDIA. When I think NVIDIA, I think graphics cards. I don't think of game consoles.
But what are graphics cards really used for? Well, gaming.
Gaming. So what do we have here?
Finally, they decided to make their own game console.
Okay.
That's really ugly.
It does look like that. It looks like a Wii mated with a Xbox controller.
Yeah, it's like the Wii plus the Xbox plus the Sony controllers all in one.
But, you know, the reviewers from the initial hands-on, they like it.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine it's very powerful because NVIDIA also released this amazing chip earlier for small that's much smaller and the world's fastest mobile chip. So that's really cool. I think this will be cool. We saw this type of gaming concept earlier released with the Wii U.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just looking at them. Yeah, yep, exactly.
And I like the idea of the Wii U better, that you can play on the TV and then take it off the TV or vice versa.
Yeah, because I'm looking at...
So it'll
I'm
be interesting to see if you can do that with this as well.
Yeah, I'm just looking at...
your game over and continue using the same controller.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at the demo here, and he's got the same game on the small screen and on, like, a big TV or a computer. So, you know, that may be possible. They added some video after the fact.
Yeah, that might be sort of a mirroring capability like the iPhone has. Versus the Wii U, though, that actually, when you put it on the big screen, turns your small, your secondary
screen. Separate ones, right.
Secondary screen.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And I think that's the way it would, you know, probably most people would want to go. Did they mention a price point here? No, they haven't got a price point yet.
No, so. Because I don't think this is something that they're actually going to pursue. I think that was just sort of something they built to showcase their new chipset. Because NVIDIA is a chipset manufacturer, just like Intel was. But I think it's a little too early for NVIDIA to branch into something new.
Right.
And I think this was just sort of a pet project. I mean, companies do them all the time to keep their employees' minds fresh.
Well, it's also to gauge consumer reaction. You know, they can also do it to gauge consumer reaction.
I mean, if it flies at CES and everyone's like, we want these, we want these, we want these, then they'll definitely build it. That's usually what another reason for CES for consumers is that there's a lot of stuff at CES that doesn't see the light of day in the consumer market. I mean, there's a couple things that I saw that never came out.
The Microsoft Courier, I'm thinking, for example, that was an amazing product. That was that little tablet, flip tablet that had two screens, and it was very, very cool. I was very impressed with that. You know, so yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens. So yeah, CES goes for how many more days?
Until the end of the week.
Until the end of the week.
Until Saturday.
Okay. The other one I also saw, I don't know why I didn't put the link in, but I mentioned it on Twitter, or I saw it on Twitter. Lenovo's come out with the 27-inch tablet. Did you see, I think it was Joel Adams tweeted that out. It was like it was like a huge, you know, very thin 27-inch screen with a stand.
Yeah, and that's really good for digital signage inside of stores.
Yeah.
And bars and stuff. So
yeah, exactly.
Those are really cool.
So, you know, more and more, it's amazing how well technology more and more integrates. People don't realize, but you know, as you say, CES is a good chance to see what's coming up and what's going to happen. So we'll definitely be talking more about CES in our next show. But our next show as well is a very special show. Not only is Jameson returning, a married man. We'll see if he survived. But also as well, it's going to be our year in review, 2012 year in review show, where we're going to be talking about, you know, what the stories were in tech, what things we found, what were the highlights, the very low lights sometimes, all that sort of stuff. So definitely want to tune in next week. James, you're going to be joining us next week, I assume, as well?
I think so.
I hope so.
Unless I end up in Vegas.
Unless you end up in Vegas, and if so, we'll...
But then I'll still have my computer.
We'll have you via Skype from Vegas. Exactly. Exactly. We'll just have to keep you out of the casino.
Oh, that's easy. I don't like it.
Exactly.
That oxygen really gets to me.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they pump it in, don't they? Which hotel did you stay at when you were there last time?
I was at the Luxor.
The Luxor. Ooh, that's like the Egyptian.
So the sideways elevators, while sick, is not the greatest.
Good tip there for people. If you're going to barf, don't do it at the Luxor. All right, picks of the week. You go ahead and start with yours first, James.
Yeah, so it took me a while to figure out because I don't really peruse the App Store too much. I get what I need and then I go. And I realize that this app I use all the time and I've never mentioned it. And it's called Alien Blue. Mm-hmm. And it's for the people out there who like Reddit, which is a very sort of niche market.
Yep.
But it brings in all of your subreddits that you're subscribed to, as well as the big Reddits.
Oh, very cool.
And lets you view them on mobile phone on the go, because the Reddit website isn't mobile friendly.
No, not at all.
A lot of really bad apps out there for it. And this is one of the better ones.
I even find the Reddit site unfriendly on a full size browser, but I see, I see they're going to have a Mac version coming soon.
So yes, that's going to be really cool. I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, that looks good. No, looks interesting. $3.99 currently for the iPad app. And it says you must be at least 17 years old to download.
Yes, because I don't think it has not safe for work filtering for the Reddit.
Does Reddit ever have a not safe for work filter?
Reddit does, but I think it's off by default. So.
Yeah, so that's fine. Okay, mine's actually as well for the iPad. I occasionally get my iPad back to use. And this is one that I've been kind of looking forward to for about 6 months. Not a lot of people know, but I'm a very heavy classic war gamer, the classic Avalon Hill stuff, you know, the stuff with like a couple of hundred counters and you can play for days sort of thing. Well, I don't have time to do that or the space to do that these days. Well, this company here, Shenandoah Studios, came out with Battle of the Bulge, and this is truly, it's a classic like wargaming come to the iPad using the AI. So what happens is you can play against another player, you can play against the computer, but it very seriously, it takes the sort of thing you'd see in a modern board war game and converts it to the iPad. It's a little bit more expensive. It's a $10 app, but again, as you were saying with yours, it is a niche market, but it's a very good app. I downloaded this as soon as it was available, and I've really been enjoying it. The AI is very good. I've only tried the demo mini campaign. I haven't tried the full-fledged one yet, but so far I'm really impressed with it. So if you're interested in, you know, historical battles, World War II, that sort of thing, this is definitely an app to try, and hopefully they're going to be coming out with some more. Definitely a good one to try for the iPad only currently. Okay, so I think we're about done. James, any other last-minute things from CES we need to know about right now?
I don't think I'm going to get there.
I don't think you're going to get
there. It's going to cost me about $1,500.
You're not going to get... Okay, James has
been... It's much cheaper when you plan these things in advance.
Yeah, people. James has been checking flights, and there you go. So, you know, if anyone has $1,500 to spare... You know, we can send James out of the country. Exactly. But if not, you know, definitely you'll be here for our year in review show next week.
The last thing from at CES is Sony's press conference is now going on.
Okay.
And we're just expecting another 4K TV. Everyone else already announced theirs.
Well, Sony, yeah, if they don't have it, like with all the other big boys, right? You know, yeah. And some of these press conferences are always hilarious. I'm looking at some of the live shots. They've got a live blogger here. You know, if you go in and where it actually says, and they've got, we've just noticed a large display under a sheet to the side of the stage. Assuming that's a new TV by the size, I'd say it's the rumored OLED rather than a new 4K set.
Yep, I just saw that picture.
Yeah. So again, yeah, like I say, it's like these all these little key keynotes and whatever. So we'll see what happens. Okay, well, thank you again for joining us for the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 19th, January the 7th, 2013. Got it right again. I'm Stuart Clark.
I'm James Wilkinson.
Thank you and be well.